This week's episode is so jam-packed that it's kind of ridiculous. Let's rapid-fire this intro because you'll see what I mean. Fedora Linux 40 is out. Ubuntu 24.04 LTS is out. Nextcloud has a new release of Nextcloud Hub, and the release notes feel like they never end. The Flathub has released a new design refresh, making it even better to use Flatpaks. And we recently had an awesome interview on the Destination Linux podcast that I have to tell you about. And all of this in one episode. Can you imagine just how much time was put into this episode? There's research, prep, recording, editing, getting the show notes and transcripts and subtitles ready for publishing and all of that. It was a lot. And whatever time you just thought of, triple it. And it's still probably more than that. So, I mean, there's just so much that even just the Ubuntu topic itself, I didn't have time to cover the flavors this week. So I'll tell you about those next week. Yeah, this is going to be one of those episodes. So welcome to This Week in Linux, your source for Linux good news. This episode of Twill is sponsored by Linbit. More on them later. The Fedora Project has announced the latest release of their Linux distro with Fedora Linux 40. There are a lot of big changes in this release, like Fedora Workstation is shipping with the latest version of GNOME with GNOME 46. The KDE spin of Fedora 40 is coming with the latest KDE Plasma, and that is the highly anticipated KDE Plasma 6. Fedora is not done yet when it comes to the desktop options, though, because Fedora 40 is also the first release with the new Fedora Atomic desktop brand, so you can get immutable-ish options of various Fedora spins with the collection of Fedora Atomic desktops. Fedora 40 is also shipping some tools for AI development by default to offer users the ability to do some local AI-related stuff, which is pretty cool. This release is just stacked with so much, so let's get into the details of some of this. Fedora's GNOME-based workstation is coming with GNOME 46. So what does that bring? Well, one of the best things that it brings in GNOME 46 is the updates to the and the improvements to the accessibility features. I think this is a critical component, and I'm always pleased to see this kind of thing in the changelog. GNOME 46 also brings many more things like improvements to the Nautilus File Manager app and the Settings app, and many other core apps have been refined for better usability. There's also grouping notifications by app, which now means that each notification has a header and it shows the app's name and icon. This makes it possible to see which app sent the alert. This is a very welcome change. Sure, it's odd that it took until 2024 to get notifications which include the name of the app sending the notification, but still, it's a good addition. You can now open a new window for apps pinned to the dash by adding a control modifier. So for example, Super Control 1 opens a new window of the first app in the dash, complementing the existing shortcut of Super 1 or the super number that launches the app itself. By default, Tap to Click is now enabled for touchpad use in GNOME 46, and GNOME 46 also now features remote login options, so you can remotely connect using RDP to a new dedicated desktop session when there isn't already an active session. If you'd like to learn more about the latest release of GNOME 46, because I just touched a little bit of the surface, there's a lot more to it, you can check out the episode of This Week in Linux with Twill 256 for more information there. Fedora's KDE spin probably has the biggest changes this cycle. Some that are much anticipated, like KDE Plasma 6, and maybe even some that might be controversial. The biggest change for Fedora KDE is that it is now shipping with Plasma 6, the huge major update to the Plasma desktop that came out a couple months ago, and Plasma 6 is a huge improvement in many ways. I am a big fan of it. I've been using it for quite a while, because I couldn't even wait for the Fedora 40 beta. I actually used the Fedora 40 nightly for, well, since it was available, like probably like a week or so before the beta or 2 weeks before the beta. I'm not sure. I've been using it for a while and it's been very good to me. But anyway, let's talk about the Plasma 6. So quick rundown of what's cool that you can expect is that there's a new overview effect for keeping tabs on all of your open applications across your all of your virtual desktops, and partial support for HDR is implemented, which is really cool. And of course, they're working on having full support later on. Accessibility improvements have been made for, you know, things like color blindness, correction filters, and also a new look to the taskbar comes in the form of a floating panel. Plasma 6 also makes customizing panels easier than ever, and they even have a nice updated modern refresh of the KDE Breeze theme, as well as the other variants like the Breeze Twilight and the Breeze Dark, and so much more. And if you'd like to learn more about the latest release of KDE Plasma with Plasma 6, you can check out Twill 255, where we covered it in much more depth. Now, there is a change that has caused a bit of a controversy and debates. That being the KDE Spin comes with a Wayland-only distro. It is possible to run X11 apps thanks to X-Wayland support, but X11 itself is not provided out of the box. Now, it is also possible to install X11 back if you want, but it won't be supported by the Spin, so it's a use-at-your-own-risk kind of deal. This is a very interesting decision because some people are saying that Wayland isn't ready now, and others are saying that that's why they're doing it, because it will help make Wayland get ready. So I can see both sides of the argument, and I kind of agree with both sides. Wayland isn't ready, so it will be a bit of an issue for some users, but at the same time, someone has to be the first to do it on this scale anyway, and who better than Fedora, since it's not the, you know, it's not new to them to do these kinds of things. Fedora has been pushing the boundaries on stuff for years, and it's one of the reasons I use Fedora. I really like that, you know, push and try new innovative things. And Fedora KDE is not the first distro to ship Wayland as the only option. I'm actually fairly certain that the award for that goes to Rebecca Black OS. That's not a joke. This is a real distro, and more shockingly, has a really useful purpose of being a Wayland testbed, and it was one of the first Wayland-only distros, maybe even was the first. I'm not 100% sure on that, but I'm pretty sure it is. If you'd like to learn more about that, let me know, because I was thinking about going into the details of this distribution, because it's so interesting. So back to Fedora KDE. I think this decision is going to create issues for some, which is unfortunate, but it also might help get Wayland ready for the full-blown production faster. And that would be a good thing. So I'm kind of torn. I'm currently running Fedora KDE with, like I said, with the Wayland only, and 99% of the stuff that I do on my computer is totally fine under the setup. I have run into one issue here and there with some legacy tools. I use it, you know, it's legacy tools though. They haven't been updated in a very long time. I think one of the tools I'm using hasn't been updated in like 8 years because it's been around for so long. It's just basically everybody just expects it to work. But really, it's only an issue with these really old tools. So other than that, it has been great, even with the games I play. In fact, the games I play run on Proton, so they seem to work better under Wayland than they do on X, so that's cool. Fedora still has X11 support for GNOME Desktop, but that is planned to be removed in the next release of Fedora 41, so we'll see what happens there. Now, the Fedora Atomic Desktop is a big part of this release, with four different spins available. So these are immutable-ish, because they put immutable in the quotations, implying that it's not really immutable, so just keep that in mind. Fedora Silver Blue for GNOME, Fedora Kinoite for KDE Plasma, Fedora Sway for Atomic, and then finally Fedora Budgie Atomic. This is very cool because an immutable style approach is a very interesting way to go about computing, so I'm very excited to give this a shot. And I will say, though, that Silver Blue and Kinoite need to be renamed to the following the new style, like Fedora GNOME Atomic and Fedora KDE Atomic, because it is just kinds of adds an unnecessary confusion for those looking at these options. And it'd just be easier just to have them simplified of being the desktop itself, or in the case of KDE, the community that builds it. But if you'd like more information on the Fedora Atomic desktops, we actually cover this on Twill 253, so check that out. Now, Fedora Linux 40 is also shipping with support for PyTorch. PyTorch is a popular framework for deep learning, and it can be difficult to reliably install, so it's very cool that Fedora is providing it out of the box. Now, this is just the first stage of support, so it's only running functionally on the CPU without GPU or NPU acceleration, but future updates will likely make improvements on this. They also plan to work on other AI-related tools for future Fedora releases, so this is very cool to see, and I'm looking forward to playing with all of that and what comes in the future for Fedora. There is so much more to talk about with the Fedora Linux, just so much, like the discussion of switching the default desktop from GNOME to KDE Plasma, or possibly making both main desktops, and what that could mean for the distro, as well as the brand new Fedora Slimbook 2 laptop that was announced recently. But we just don't have the time. If you want to learn more about this stuff, I have a bunch of links to everything we've talked about and the things that we didn't get a chance to talk about in the show notes. Have you heard of the distro Ubuntu? I mean, it's super obscure, so you probably haven't, but let me tell you about the latest release of this Linux distro that you've never seen before. Ubuntu 24.04 LTS, codename Noble Numbat, has landed, and it is a beast. Not a numbat. Those things are pretty small and kind of adorable. I mean, the distro that you just found out about. Now, the LTS part of that version number, that means it's a long-term support edition of the distro. So you get 5 years of free updates and security fixes with an extra 5 years of extended coverage if you get Ubuntu Pro. And Ubuntu Pro is free for regular users for a few computers, but if you want even more support, you can be an enterprise user and get bumped up to 12 years of support. That's right, your nobility can be rocking until 2036 if you want to. But enough about boring security updates. Let's get to the good stuff. The new features, the new and shiny. First up, the installer got a makeover. It's got a fresh look with snazzy new illustrations and accessibility options. Plus, if you're into automation, you can now use YAML configuration files to speed up the installation process, which is pretty fancy. Now, speaking of speeding things up, Ubuntu 24.04 now uses the Linux kernel version 6.8. This means better performance for Intel Meteor Lake CPUs, support for Nintendo Switch online controllers, and fixes for some pretty pesky Wi-Fi issues on AMD laptops. And gamers, well, this update comes with a bunch of improvements for you that will make your favorite titles run smoother, and they even bumped up the virtual memory mapping limit, so say goodbye to bottlenecks, and in fact, it should fix some games that wouldn't launch before, so that's really cool. Now, you might notice that the default install is a bit more minimal this time around. They're calling it Essential Software Only, which basically means you get the Mozilla Firefox web browser, the App Center, a text editor, and some system utilities. But fear not, citizen. There's an expanded installation option that comes with all the bells and whistles, like LibreOffice and a video player and a bunch of stuff, yeah. Ubuntu 24.04 comes with NetPlan 1.0 also, and NetPlan is a utility for easily configuring networking on a Linux system. You simply create a YAML description of the required network interfaces and what each should be doing. From this description, NetPlan will generate all the necessary configuration for your chosen rendering tool, and NetPlan 1.0 delivers support simultaneous for WPA2 and WPA3 connections. Also, it has support for Mellanox VFLAG. It improves VXLAN and also delivers stable NetPlan or libNetPlan 1 API. So one other cool addition that I'm happy to see is support for HEIF and HEIC image files, which are quite common on modern smartphones, especially iPhones and many Samsung phones. So you can finally see those fancy selfies without any hassle. This is very important for me because not being able to see my selfies was such a bummer. But the biggest change comes from the new GNOME 46 desktop environment. It brings a ton of improvements to the file manager, like I said in the previous topic with Fedora. Also includes in powerful new search features and the notifications thing that has been improved, where you also have handy little buttons to collapse and expand those notifications. And if you want more details, like I said in the previous one, you can check out Twill 257 for more information on GNOME 46. Overall, Ubuntu 24.04 LTS is a solid update with a focus on performance and security and accessibility. If you're already using Ubuntu because you're such a hipster and already knew about this super obscure distro, then upgrading is a pretty easy decision, so you could do that, but not yet. You don't want to do that just yet. It turns out upgrades to 24.04 are hitting some snags that could be pretty bad, so it's advised to wait until Ubuntu activates the upgrade prompts. I mean, in the coming days or weeks, whenever it happens, you should receive a prompt letting you know it's ready to upgrade, and you just click the upgrade button. But there are ways to do it now that some people are talking about because you can do it through the command line, and I'm here to tell you that you shouldn't right now. For more details on that, I'll link to an OMG Ubuntu article on this specific topic. If you're doing a fresh install, though, you don't have to wait anymore. You can just go do it. Head over to Ubuntu's website, grab the ISO, and then give Noble Numbat a spin. This episode of Twill is brought to you by Linbit. Linbit has been keeping digital businesses running for over 20 years. They're the makers of open source products like DRBD, which is high availability software that has been part of the Linux kernel since 2010, and Linstore, industry-leading open source software-defined storage. LinBit has an active presence in the open source community as well because they collaborate with the community to help identify and build new features to their products. LinBit provides enterprise-grade software that runs on a variety of platforms without vendor lock-in, which is really cool because no matter what your OS is and no matter what kind of hardware you want to use, including off-the-shelf hardware, you're good to go with DRBD and LinStore. And also with DRBD and LinStore, you can have high-speed replicated block storage in almost any configuration, whether it's Kubernetes, Apache Cloud, or OpenNebula. There's even DRBD proxy for long-distance replication. LinBit provides really awesome services like DRBD, and DRBD is a really good way to make sure you have good data recovery and backups. And if you ever have like a cluster with multiple nodes and one of those nodes fails, you can have rest assurance that the backup nodes will have the data that you want. So if you're interested in checking out any of the software from LinBit, I highly recommend it. So go to linbit.com to check it out. That's linbit.com. Finding Linux apps used to be kind of problematic, but these days, thanks to the FlatHub, that task is so much easier. This week, the FlatHub unveiled a new refreshed design of the App Store for Linux. Well, there are many different App Stores for Linux, but the FlatHub specifically says on their website, and making a claim, it's a bold claim, but it says the App Store for Linux. And for me personally, that's where I go for most of the time. So I guess, yeah, it is. FlatHub's new look is all about making it easier to find the software that you're looking for, and even some you aren't. The homepage has some very nice changes with a slick banner that's showcasing five hot new apps, which is updated every week. And maybe you like to try new apps on the daily, so once a week isn't enough? Well, no sweat, because FlatHub's hooking you up with a brand new App of the Day section. Plus, they added a fancy new tabbed switcher that lets you browse trending, popular, new, and updated apps with just a click. It also does this through JavaScript, so there's no need to wait for the pages to reload. That's pretty good. I like these changes because they make it easier to discover new apps rather than just a static searchable directory. That's good too, as well, but not exclusively that. I like having this in addition. But speaking of searching, they improved the search results by adding filters that you can just choose to see, for example, only verified apps. And you can also search for just open source or just proprietary and many more convenient filters. Also, if you're new to the whole Flatpak thing, they've made the setup guides more prominent on the homepage, so you'll be able to get set up in no time. So go check out the latest version of the FlatHub, and if you find something cool that I haven't featured on this show or Destination Linux before, then send me a message at thisweekinlinux.com/submit. I will be attending this year's Red Hat Summit and Ansible Fest, which is taking place on May 6th through the 9th in Denver, Colorado. I have never been to Red Hat Summit before, so I'm looking forward to that. And Red Hat sent out a swag bag to all the attendees, and it's easily the best swag bag I have ever seen for a conference. Ryan, my co-host of Destination Linux, he made a video on his YouTube channel about it, unboxing it so you can see what's in the swag box. So I'll link that in the show notes for anyone who's curious. And for those that don't know, Red Hat describes the conference as it brings together IT professionals, customers, partners, and peers to provide you the tools, connections, and knowledge to support your technology goals. And that sounds super nerdy, and therefore right up my alley. So I can't wait. If you're attending, be sure to say hey. Nextcloud is an open source remote collaboration platform. What does that mean? Well, basically, imagine Google Docs or Google Workspace, but open source, and you can host it yourself wherever you want. Nextcloud is very cool and offers so many features. Nextcloud 7 was released about 4 months ago, and I covered it here on Twill last December. The Nextcloud team then looked at all the progress they made and decided that it was time to take a vacation of sorts, you know, not work on developing it anymore for a while. I'm kidding. That's clearly not true because Nextcloud Hub 8 has been released this week, and the release notes are like reading a 500-page novel of new cool features. I'm not kidding about that part. It's a very long release page, and I'm not going to have time to go into much detail for this topic because there's just so much to tell you about. If I were to go into detail, it would take me about 59 minutes and 24 seconds just on this topic. How do I know it would take that long, and how can I be that specific, you might be thinking? Well, that's how long the announcement video from Nextcloud themselves actually is. So there you go. But seriously, this is such a long release. I think that I could probably do this entire topic with the website scrolling, and it will still be scrolling by the time I'm done with the topic. Maybe let's try that. Let's see what we can do. So Nextcloud has their own AI, which is Nextcloud Assistant 2.0, which is basically your own AI-powered workspace assistant. Provides context-aware features like summarizing conversations and composing emails and lots of stuff. Also, they've improved the performance of Nextcloud, delivering a faster and smoother experience, allowing you to work more efficiently, which is great. And they've also added something called interactive widgets, which are ridiculously cool. Basically, you can edit meeting notes in a talk chat while video conferencing. You can scroll through a project deck board on a collectives page, or add a whole interactive calendar to your planning file in text. I mean, there's lots of stuff you can do. In fact, on their blog post, they say, with interactive widgets in Hub, you can quite literally embed one app into another. Very cool. Also, the next one's pretty cool too. Federated chat. So if you know other people who are using Nextcloud servers, you can now chat with users from other Nextcloud servers for better collaboration across various teams. Very cool. So now let's talk about more AI stuff, because there's a really interesting approach that they're doing, which is ethical AI. So it offers transparency and control over the AI features, letting you decide how all the AI stuff is being used, which is just very cool. Also, there's one-time links and QR codes to share files securely with options to prevent unwanted access, which is very nice too. And also BITV 2.0 certification, which ensures accessibility for all users and meets high security standards. Now, there's also many, many ways they've improved the collaboration and communication stuff. So for example, there's faster mail with AI-powered features. You can get reply suggestions and create events from emails for quicker communication and just a lot more. You can use the message editing in the talk we talked about in the interactive widget thing. This is very cool because you're able to correct stuff after you send it to a person. So for example, if you make a mistake in one of the files, you can update the message after sending it in the chats, and it's just very cool. Also, public collective sharing, which is very interesting because it makes it easy to share specific pages from your knowledge bases with external users. So that's very nice. And also, they've been doing some stuff for the public sector, so like government agencies and that sort of thing. So there's addressing specific needs for them, such as data sovereignty and accessibility, which that's really cool. Also, there's Nextcloud tables with no code apps. Now, what does that mean? Well, it means you can build custom apps for managing processes and centralizing project data, which is very cool. There's a lot more features. So, personal file section in Files app, which makes you be able to organize your own documents and files in a dedicated space. Optimize navigation in the Photos app. You can browse photos from a chosen folder and enjoy smoother previews. They have desktop client updates, improved functionality and performance across all of the platforms for those various different clients. And overall, Nextcloud Hub 8 is a huge update, as you can tell. And this one focuses on productivity, security, and collaboration with some special emphasis on the needs for the public sector. Now, we've been using Nextcloud Hub for Tux Digital for quite a while, So I'm very excited to try this out and see, like, for myself, what the big differences are. I already know that there's a ton of them. I want to see, you know, hands-on kind of thing. So maybe in the future, we'll let you know. In fact, that will absolutely happen, because on Destination Linux, we're going to let you know about the test that we're doing with Nextcloud. And we're definitely going to have to be putting Nextcloud Hub 8 in there. So be sure to subscribe to that podcast. This episode of This Week in Linux is sponsored by me. Did you know I have a podcast? Okay, sure, this is a podcast too, but I mean a more traditional style podcast. It's called Destination Linux, and it's easily one of the best podcasts ever created. I'm not biased about that either. Just because I'm on the show does not make me biased. In fact, that's backed by scientific data. We did a study. I asked my mom, and she said it was the best show, and you can't argue with stats, right? I mean, come on. But if you haven't seen the show before, I highly recommend that you check it out, because our recent episodes are just so good. It would be a shame to miss it. We've had some awesome episodes recently. Any of them would be a great place to start. But I think you should check out the interview that we had with John Mad Dog Hall. Mad Dog is a legend of Linux, and he helped bring Linux to the masses early on. And he was so nice to share his story with us. And you just got to check it out. If you're a fan of Linux and want to know some of the history of how it came to be, and how it came to be the most popular open source project ever made, then check the link in the show notes. Hey, remember last week when I told you about Bazite 2.5? Well, I covered that version because I expected Bazite 3.0 the new one based on Fedora 40, to be released a few weeks after Fedora 40 came out. Turns out it was a few hours. Introducing Bazite 3.0. So once more, this time with feeling. Bazite is a very cool Linux gaming distro, made by the Universal Blue team. For those unfamiliar, the Universal Blue project builds various distro images based on Fedora Atomic's approach to immutability. They provide a collection of container images using Fedora's support for OCI / Docker containers, and Bazite is one of those. Bazite comes with Steam and Lutris pre-installed, HDR support for AMD GPUs, System 76 scheduler to ensure your currently focused game or application has your CPU's priority, and numerous community-developed tools to provide a solid gaming experience with the base of Fedora Atomic. Bazite can be used as a standard distro with KDE Plasma or GNOME, and it can also be used as a Steam Deck-like experience with their Steam gaming mode. Now let's talk about what's new with Bazite 3.0. They've upgraded to Fedora 40. There's that. Also, KDE Plasma 6 comes with that. GNOME 46 comes with that because of Fedora 40. And also, they have the 6.8 Linux kernel. They've also done driver upgrades for AMD and Intel GPUs. AnLoki Max support has been added, and AnLoki Zero support has been added. They've done improvements for supported handhelds, like the HHD overlay is now stable. The gyro support, parity for Lenovo Legion Go, charge limits set for Lenovo Legion Go as well, and the Asus ROG Ally custom TDP that uses the kernel driver has been added, as well as custom fan curve support for the Asus ROG Ally. They've also added CDEMU, FastFetch, Zoxide, and Olama. I think it's what it is, Olama. So I wasn't expecting Bazite to come out so quickly, but apparently some people were, because in their forum post, they had an apology that says, "We apologize for the 12-hour delay for the update where we transitioned to using Fedora 40 builds." How dare you? How dare you have 12 hours delay? I was expecting weeks. 12 hours is totally fine. There is a new version of Tails out. Tails is a portable Linux-based operating system with a goal to protect against surveillance and censorship. Tails is an acronym for the Amnesic Incognito Live System. Let's see what's new in Tails 6.2. So they have improved security. They have mitigated Spectre V version 4 vulnerability affecting Intel processors. They've done some fixes for Wi-Fi issues on some hardware. Disabled sysrec keys to prevent crashes. There's some new languages that were added, such as actually 21 of them, that also include Albanian, Korean, and Ukrainian. Also, there's updates for the Tor web browser and the Tor client. They've improved detection of errors when running Tails from a USB stick. They've upgraded the upgrader utility now defaults to upgrade later option, and the welcome screen localization sections renamed to language and formats. For those interested in checking out Tails, well, the link will not be in the show notes because that wouldn't be very incognito, would it? Yeah, it'll be there. Thanks for watching this episode of This Week in Linux. If you like what I do here on the show and want to be kept up to date with what's going on in the Linux and open source world, then be sure to subscribe. And of course, remember to like that smash button. If you'd like to support the show and the Tux Digital Network, then consider becoming a patron by going to tuxdigital.com/membership, where you can get a bunch of cool perks like access to patron-only sections of our Discord server and much, much more. You can also support the show by ordering the Linux Everywhere t-shirt or the This Week in Linux shirt at tuxdigital.com/store. Plus, while you're there, check out all the other great stuff we have, like hats, mugs, hoodies, and so much more at tuxdigital.com/store. I'll see you next time for another episode of your source for Linux GNUs. Thanks again for watching. I'm Michael Tennell. I hope you're doing swell. Be sure to ring that notification bell. And until next time, I bid you farewell.